Attention listeners, AfterSight's annual hike is coming up on July 27th.
It was a really good experience for me.
Visit aftersight.org/hike and become an audio trekker today.
That hike today gave me so much courage.
Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for the Loveland Reporter Herald, read by Catherine Villa. This is being recorded on May 4th. Today we will be reading the following main articles. Despite progress, homes still out of reach, written by Aldo Svaldi. Auraria protests, Denver police refused campus request, written by Shelley Bradbury. AI-enabled jet takes Air Force chief for a ride, written by Tara Kopp, and following up with miscellaneous articles. Builders making a dent in shortfall. Despite progress, homes still out of reach. Only 6% of houses sold in metro area affordable to buyers with typical income. By Aldo Svaldi. Builders are finally making a dent in the state's housing shortfall, especially for apartments. But home prices and mortgage rates continue to outpace income gains, and affordability is worsening rather than improving. Quote, the story with interest rates is that they are only exacerbating the problem, end quote, said Stephen Byers, chief economist with the Common Sense Institute in Denver. Quote, the fact is that wages aren't keeping up with these huge jumps in home prices, end quote. For the first time since July 2022, home prices in all major U.S. metros, including Denver, rose year over year, reports brokerage firm Redfin. The S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller Index for Denver has home prices up 2.7% the past year through February. After 5 weeks of increases, the average interest rate charged on a 30-year loan reached 7.22%, the highest level since Thanksgiving, according to Freddie Mac. Purchasing a home was hard before, and it is only getting harder. In 2011, a buyer in Colorado could expect to work 44 hours a month on average to cover the mortgage payment. That bar moved up to 96 hours last year, a 118% increase, according to CSI's Colorado Housing Competitive Index, which Byers co-authored. Things are only slightly better for renters. They had to work 45 hours on average to cover the monthly rent in 2011. Now they have to work 87 hours. Colorado tenants devote more hours of work a month to meet the rent than do residents of any other state, according to the CSI report. After the Great Recession, Metro Denver became a hotspot for young professionals and tech workers looking to relocate. Demand for housing outstripped supply, causing home prices and rents to rise. Net domestic migration has fallen the past 2 years, as more people pick up and leave and fewer move in, Byers said. Higher housing costs have made the state less attractive. That is both good and bad. Slower population growth should reduce pressure on the housing market and give builders time to catch up, stabilizing home prices and rents over time. But it also leaves employers and the larger economy, long dependent on importing the talent it needs, vulnerable. If the economy stalls, those struggling with higher living costs could pay the price. Of the 50 largest U.S. metro areas, only 6 have median income prices that align with median incomes, according to a study from Clever Real Estate. Denver had the 8th biggest gap in the amount of income needed to attain a median-priced home. Zillow places the typical home value in Metro Denver at just shy of $561,000 in December. Assuming a 20% down payment and at current mortgage rates, an annual income of $167,562 would be required to buy that home, according to the Clever Real Estate study. But here's where it gets painful. The median income for Metro Denver households is $98,975 a year, resulting in a shortfall of $68,587. Denver residents earn above average incomes, but the higher pay isn't enough to cover way above average housing costs. Wages tend to be lower in other parts of the state, and the affordability gap statewide is a little larger at $69,587. Colorado's median home price is $531,900, not too far behind the Metro Denver median price. With 20% down, that requires an income of $158,889, according to Clever Real Estate. The median household income statewide is $89,302. Absent outside help, first-time buyers are often hard-pressed to put 20% down. That would require $112,200 on the typical home in Denver. What could someone putting 10% down and making the median income in Denver afford after the recent jump in mortgage rates? Clever Real Estate puts that amount closer to $270,000 to $280,000. Good luck finding that. Out of 6,458 single-family closings in Metro Denver in the first 3 months of the year, only 50 involved a home priced below $300,000, according to the Denver Metro Association of Realtors. Buyers of condos and townhomes face better odds, with 452 out of 2,343 sales this year below $300,000. But even there, only 20% of listings are affordable to households earning a median income. Only 5.7% of sales, homes, or condos were attainable. The hurdle is even higher for new home buyers. The median new home price in Colorado is about $650,000, according to a study from the National Association of Home Builders. Only one in five households in the state can afford something at that price point. 2 million households in the state can't afford to purchase a new home at the middle price point. Most renters have limited options when it comes to buying in Metro Denver, but in their favor, renting offers a substantial discount over buying right now, according to a separate analysis from Bankrate, the personal finance website. Quote, "I wouldn't say rent is affordable, but between buying and renting, renting is the lesser of two evils," end quote, said Alex Gailey, lead data reporter at Bankrate and the author of the analysis. Auraria protests. Denver police refused campus request. By Shelley Bradbury. Denver Police Chief Ron Thomas said Friday that he refused Auraria campus officials' request to clear pro-Palestine demonstrators from an encampment a second time after police arrested 45 people in a tense sweep of the site last week, and said there is no legal way for officers to dismantle the demonstration. Thomas blamed Auraria campus leaders for mishandling the aftermath of the mass arrests, saying he'd expect the campus to collect demonstrators' tents to return them at a later time, but that the campus instead left the tents at the site, allowing the protesters to quickly rebuild their Gaza Solidarity encampment on the Tivoli Quad. Quote, "And as you might imagine, they just came and re-erected the tents and we were back at square one, at which point Auraria officials asked us to come back and engage in the operation again, and I didn't think it was safe, nor did I think it was appropriate to go in and do that again, so I shut it down," end quote, Thomas said. Thomas, who spoke during a regular meeting of Denver's Citizen Oversight Board on Friday, went on to say that law enforcement has no legal way to clear the pro-Palestine encampment at the campus that serves the University of Colorado Denver, Metropolitan State University of Denver, and Community College of Denver. Quote, "While the school would prefer the group leave the area, I just don't think there's any legal way to do that. Well, I know there's no legal way to do that unless they truly do something that creates an unlawful assembly," end quote, he said. Thomas added, police have no indication the demonstration will soon shift into an unlawful assembly. He said negotiations have been ongoing with the demonstrators since last week to remove the tents, and he continues to speak with Auraria campus leadership about the situation. Quote, I've been explaining to the leadership at Auraria that we absolutely aren't going to just go in and sweep out this peaceful protest just because they're occupying a space on your campus that you'd like to use for something else right now. And because of your fears that maybe this could grow to the point where it interferes with other campus activities, end quote, Thomas said, quote, I've made that pretty clear, end quote. Auraria campus representatives did not comment on the chief's position Friday. The campus did release a statement saying officials had met again with the student protesters and vowed to, quote, continue to support and encourage peaceful debate and civil engagement on our campus while ensuring the safety of our students, employees, and visitors, end quote. The Denver City Attorney's Office, which is prosecuting the people arrested at Auraria last week, did not respond to inquiries from the Post, nor did a representative for Mayor Mike Johnson. Thomas's approach is an about-face from a week ago when Denver police officers, Denver sheriff's deputies, and troopers from Colorado State Patrol attempted to dismantle the encampment on April 26th. The officers declared that the demonstrators were trespassing because they had erected tents in violation of campus rules prohibiting camping. Officers arrested 40 people on trespassing charges and another 5 on charges connected to assaulting officers, Thomas said Friday in response to questions from the Citizen Oversight Board members. Quote, I approved the plan. My thought in my mind was it would result in a small number of arrests, if any, and ultimately that didn't turn out to be the case, end quote, Thomas said. Military tech. AI-enabled jet takes Air Force chief for historic ride, by Tara Kopp. Edwards Air Force Base, California. With the midday sun blazing, an experimental orange and white F-16 fighter jet launched with a familiar roar that is a hallmark of U.S. air power. But the aerial combat that followed was unlike any other. This F-16 was controlled by artificial intelligence, not a human pilot, and riding in the front seat was Air Force Secretary Frank Kendall. AI marks one of the biggest advances in military aviation since the introduction of stealth in the early 1990s, and the Air Force has aggressively leaned in. Even though the technology is not fully developed, the service is planning for an AI-enabled fleet of more than 1,000 unmanned warplanes, the first of them operating by 2028. It was fitting that the dogfight took place at Edwards Air Force Base, a vast desert facility where Chuck Yeager broke the speed of sound and the military has incubated its most secret aerospace advances. Inside classified simulators and buildings with layers of shielding against surveillance, a new test pilot generation is training AI agents to fly in war. Kendall traveled here to see AI fly in real time and make a public statement of confidence in its future role in air combat. Quote, it's a security risk not to have it. At this point, we have to have it, end quote, Kendall said in an interview with the Associated Press after he landed. The AP, along with NBC, was granted permission to witness the secret flight on the condition that it would not be reported until it was complete because of the operational security concerns. The AI-controlled F-16, called Vista, flew Kendall in lightning-fast maneuvers at more than 550 miles an hour that put pressure on his body at 5 times the force of gravity. It went nearly nose-to-nose with a second human-piloted F-16 as both aircraft raced within 1,000 feet of each other, twisting and looping to try to force their opponent into vulnerable positions. At the end of the hour-long flight, Kendall climbed out of the cockpit grinning. He said he'd seen enough during his flight that he'd trust the still-learning AI with the ability to decide whether or not to launch weapons in war. There's a lot of opposition to that idea. Arms control experts and humanitarian groups are deeply concerned that AI one day might be able to autonomously drop bombs that kill people without further human consultation, and they are seeking greater restrictions on its use. Quote, there are widespread and serious concerns about ceding life and death decisions to sensors and software, end quote. The International Committee of the Red Cross has warned, autonomous weapons, quote, are an immediate cause of concern and demand an urgent international political response. Kendall said there will always be human oversight at the system when weapons are used. The military's shift to AI-enabled planes is driven by security, cost, and strategic capability. If the U.S. and China should end up in conflict, for example, today's Air Force fleet of expensive, manned fighters will be vulnerable because of gains on both sides in electronic warfare, space, and air defense systems. China's Air Force is on pace to outnumber the U.S., and it is also amassing a fleet of flying unmanned weapons. Future war scenarios envision swarms of American unmanned aircraft providing an advance attack on enemy defenses to give the U.S. the ability to penetrate an airspace without high risk to pilot lives. But the shift is also driven by money. And now for miscellaneous articles. Talent Show. Senior care residents show appreciation for firefighters. By Austin Flesks. Residents of Loveland's North Shore Health and Rehabilitation Center put on a special show Friday afternoon, singing, telling jokes, and even performing magic, all for a fun way to say thank you to local firefighters. And the firefighters enjoyed spending time with the residents in a positive setting. Allison DeSands, the founder of Benny, a nonprofit that brings live entertainment across northern Colorado, particularly to senior facilities, in honor of her Uncle Benny, helped bring the event together. Quote, I know he would want me to. It brought a lot of joy to him when I would do it, end quote, she said. DeSands said following last Christmas season when she brought a Santa actor to different senior facilities, she was in Loveland and noticed the North Shore facility, one she said she had never seen before. She went in to donate some leftover stuffed bears and connected with activities director Bertina Gonzalez. The two started to chat and Gonzalez mentioned that they were planning to have a party to show appreciation for the Loveland Fire Rescue Authority, coming just ahead of National Firefighter Day, which is recognized on May 4th. DeSands instead offered another idea, one that she had never tried before, having the residents put on a talent show. Quote, if it can be done, we are the ones who are going to do it, end quote, she said. Quote, I was like, let's do it, end quote, Gonzalez said. Gonzalez was able to connect with a large group of the facility's residents and got them on board, saying that while some were initially nervous, they were happy to perform once they realized it was to thank local firefighters. The result was a group of residents performing in different ways. First, a collection of residents in matching blue shirts played drums, tambourines, and ukuleles, all of which were donated to the event by Willow River Music, as singer Chris Gallegos, not a resident, sang Mambo No. 5. And the fun didn't stop there, as another resident performed a selection of magic tricks and another told jokes. Shirley Surface, a resident of North Shore for a year and a half who played a tambourine during the band performance, said it was a very nice thing to be a part of, especially to thank local firefighters. Quote, when we need them, they're here. They do a real good job and they're real polite, end quote, she said. Glenda LeClaire, who performed her magic tricks as Glenda the Magnificent and serves as the resident council president, said those at North Shore who performed were happy to show their appreciation for LFRA, adding they do great work both in the community at large and at the facility when needed. Quote, they're just in the business of life-saving, end quote, she said. Quote, it melts my heart, end quote, said North Shore Executive Director Lynn Stockwell after seeing the performances. Quote, this is the reason we are here, to take care of the residents and to be their family. End quote. Stockwell also honored the three LFRA members of Station 2 who attended the event, firefighter Priscilla Tanger, engineer Shelby Stanley, and engineer John Rockwood, with a certificate of appreciation. Rockwood told the gathered residents that while they don't always receive this kind of praise for their work, it touches them when they do. Quote, "This means a lot to us," end quote, he said. The Station 2 crew agreed that getting to come and be with the residents they've seen before for something fun was great. Rockwood said it was nice to see them happy and smiling. Quote, "It's nice to see this facility and its residents here in a non-emergency situation," Tanger said. For those who helped plan the event, being able to show appreciation to the firefighters meant just as much as it did for the facility residents. Quote, "The firefighters rescue lives every day, and they come help us when we need them. We always get them when they are in a rush and doing their job, so it is really nice to have some representation so we could appreciate them," end quote, Stockwell said. Quote, "It is extremely important for us to honor them and everyone behind the scenes, really," end quote, DeSand said. Gonzalez said, for the residents who participated, knowing the LFRA was coming in was an important motivating factor. Quote, "It made me realize how important they are to us and to our community and how important they are to our residents here," end quote, she said. Quote, "Because they do come and visit a lot. That was very important to them, and I saw the interest in that and how big it became," end quote. CSU, board increases tuition for next year. Tuition at Colorado State University will increase by 3% for state residents next year, the limit permitted by state law. For out-of-state students, tuition will increase by 4%. The Board of Governors of the university system approved budgets at its meeting Thursday, which included the tuition increases. Operations for the university system will also benefit from increases in state aid, which totaled an increase of 9% this year, the university said in a press statement released during the meeting. Quote, "Our state leaders have a real challenge every year when they work on the state budget because Colorado ranks near the bottom nationally in state funding for higher education, and we started this budget cycle concerned that we would continue to fall behind in a way that would not serve our students or the broader state," end quote, Chancellor Tony Frank said in a press statement. Quote, "Instead, lawmakers delivered stable funding to public higher education, and we appreciate that they recognized the importance of providing access to an affordable world-class education and serving the entire state through teaching, research, and service," end quote. Approved budgets for the fiscal year that begins July 1st include tuition increases, which amount to $186 a semester for in-state students attending CSU and Fort Collins. Non-resident tuition will increase by $653 per semester. About a quarter of the tuition increases will be spent on student financial aid. At CSU Pueblo, undergraduate tuition for Colorado resident students will increase $128 a semester. CSU Fort Collins has budgeted for a 1% increase in compensation for faculty and administrative professional staff. CSU Pueblo will increase faculty and staff salaries with a 3% merit pool for faculty and administrative professional staff. CSU Global, the university's system's online university, does not receive state funding or collect student fees and has not raised tuition rates since its inception in 2007. However, for the upcoming year, tuition for CSU Global will have a $375 per credit rate for undergraduate courses and a $675 per credit rate for graduate level courses. Existing students will not see a change in tuition due to the school's tuition guarantee. Today's obituaries: Michael E. Anderson, Betty McKinley, Mona G. Rosenberg, Detta Daly, Virginia Schlager. Thank you for joining us for the Loveland Reporter Herald, read by Catherine Villa.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.